A quick PSA today before we begin, since I've received many comments to this effect. I assure you this is not AI. This is my voice. I try to read the readings with some gravity and solemnity. I don't tend to like it when people at Mass do the readings dramatically or anything like that. Maybe I come across as too robotic, but it is my voice. I do sit down and read these every day. So please do not comment that I use AI, because there's never been any AI used on this podcast. All right, take it away, choir. Thursday, August 7th. The first reading from Numbers chapter 20, verses 1 through 13. The whole congregation of the children of Israel arrived in the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people settled at Kadesh. It was here that Miriam died, and here that she was buried. As the community had no water, they held a council against Moses and Aaron. The people contended with Moses, exclaiming, "Would that we too had perished with our kinsmen in the Lord's presence. Why have you brought the Lord's assembly into this desert where we and our livestock are dying? Why did you lead us out of Egypt, only to bring us to this wretched place, which has neither grain nor figs, nor vines, nor pomegranates? Here there is not even water to drink." But Moses and Aaron went away from the assembly to the entrance of the meeting tent, where they fell prostrate. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to them, and the Lord said to Moses, "Take your staff and assemble the community, you and your brother Aaron, and in their presence order the rock to yield its waters. From the rock you shall bring forth water for the congregation and their livestock to drink." So Moses took his staff from its place before the Lord, as he was ordered. He and Aaron assembled the community in front of the rock, where he said to them, "Listen to me, you rebels. Are we to bring water for you out of this rock?" Then, raising his hand, Moses struck the rock twice with his staff, and water gushed out in abundance for the people and their livestock to drink. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you were not faithful to me in showing forth my sanctity before the children of Israel, you shall not lead this community into the land I will give them. These are the waters of Meribah, where the children of Israel contended against the Lord, and where the Lord revealed his sanctity among them." Haydock Commentary. If God had not condemned the conduct of Moses and Aaron on this occasion, we would hardly find any reason to blame them. But the fathers observed that they betrayed a want of resolution and intended to throw blame upon the incredulity of the people in case they failed of success. They were not commanded to strike the rock at all, and when the water did not come at first, they struck again, being afraid lest they should now be taken for impostors. They also speak as if the work was their own. They exasperate the people instead of promoting their conversion. In a word, they did not glorify God by representing him as the sovereign holiness and mercy and the God of unbounded power. This rock was a figure of Christ, and the water that issued out from the rock of his precious blood, the source of all our good. The striking twice with the rod denoted the cross, composed of two pieces of wood. So says St. Augustine. The fault of Moses and Aaron on this occasion was a certain diffidence and weakness of faith, not doubting of God's power or veracity, but apprehending the unworthiness of that rebellious and incredulous people, and therefore speaking with some ambiguity. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 23. Jesus went into the region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter said in reply, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus said to him in reply, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my heavenly Father. And so I say to you, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then he strictly ordered his disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer greatly from the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. Then Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, "God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen to you." He turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle to me. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. Haydock Commentary. The power of binding is exercised first by refusing to absolve, second by enjoining penance for sins forgiven, third by excommunication, suspension, or interdict, fourth by making rules and laws for the government of the Church, fifth by determining what is of faith by the judgments and definitions of the Church. What is here meant by the keys is best understood by Isaiah 22:22, where they signify ruling the whole family or house of the king, and this being by Christ accommodated to the Church denotes the power of governing it. He strictly ordered his disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. But why did he lay this injunction? To avoid the envy of the scribes, and not to appear to raise his own glory. He wished the people to be induced to own him for their Messiah, not from the testimony of his retainers, but from his miracles and doctrines. And because, as his time was not yet come, the apostles were not yet fit to deliver, nor the people to receive, this grand tenet. It might moreover have proved a hindrance to his death. When the apostles firmly believed that Jesus was the Messiah and the true Son of God, he saw it necessary to let them know that he was to die an infamous death on the cross, that they might be disposed to believe that mystery, and that they might not be too much exalted with the power given to them and manifestation made to them. Peter, taking him out of a tender love, respect, and zeal for his honor, began to expostulate with him, and as it were to reprove him, saying, "Lord, far be it from thee, God forbid." "Get behind me, Satan." The words may signify, "Be gone from me," but the expositions of the ancient fathers have these words to signify, "Come after me," or "Follow me." Satan is the same as an adversary, and is here applied to Peter, because he opposed, out of mistaken zeal, Christ's passion, without which the great work of man's redemption could not be effected. Peter, unknowingly or innocently, raised an opposition against the will of God, against the glory of Jesus, against the redemption of mankind, and against the destruction of the devil's kingdom. He did not understand that there was nothing more glorious than to make of one's life a sacrifice to God. Peter's judgment here is not conformable with that of God. Hence our separated brethren conclude that Christ did not, in calling him the rock, appoint him the solid and permanent foundation of his church. This conclusion, however, is not true, because as St. Augustine and theologians affirm, Peter could fall into error in points regarding morals and facts, though not in defining or deciding on points of faith. Moreover, St. Peter was not, as St. Jerome says, appointed the pillar of the church till after Christ's resurrection. And it was not till the night before Christ suffered that he said to Peter, "Behold, Satan hath desired to have thee, but I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not, and thou being once converted, confirm thy brethren."